You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com. Offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Trek Fan. Trek Fan isn't just a Star Trek fan club, it's a challenge. You will explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. And in the spirit of an enlightened future, Trek Fan is absolutely free. Not just free to play, but completely free. Find out more by visiting fm.trekfan.org.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Everybody at home and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the journey!
I am your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt.
And what we're doing today is an episode commentary which you people at home, or driving, seem to enjoy. That's where we take an episode and we watch it, whether it's off of our DVD, our Blu-ray... Well, it's Voyager, so it's not off of our Blu-ray just yet.
Not yet.
Or Netflix, or Hulu.
Yeah, or
Hulu?
I don't know.
Or iTunes, or whatever, however you want to watch it.
Yeah, Amazon Prime. There's a gazillion ways to get Star Trek, even just streaming alone, much less any of the other ways that you can.
It is a beautiful time to be a Star Trek fan, because there is no reason not to be able to get a hold of an episode. And this episode is Persistence of Vision, Season 2, Episode 8, and this is how Netflix describes the plot. The Voyager crew enters a new region of space and begins to see hallucinations. The captain sees her holonovel characters come to life.
Oh my.
So, Char, you and I are going to listen, we're going to pay attention, we're going to riff, we're going to joke, we're going to jive, and we're going to have a good time.
Sounds good to me, buddy. Let's do this.
So what we recommend that you do is, if you're listening at home and you actually have the opportunity to play, what we're going to do is we're going to do a countdown. 3, 2, 1, play. And when you hear my sultry pear-shaped tones say play, that's when you click or hit play on your remote and we will be synced up. And
yes.
For you listeners in other parts of the world, in the non-US or non-Region 1 or Region A world, We have been starting to make a separate file just for you, and so all you have to do is go to trek.fm/contact, and then we will send you a direct link to download the non-USA version.
Yeah, that's so cool that you do that. I'm so glad that you're a video editor and know how to do that, because it gives us a little bit of an edge over a lot of other podcasts.
It gives us an edge over the competition. And plus, yeah. We love everyone and not just Americans.
Yes, yes. It's not just about America. We know that there's other people out here in the big, vast world.
How like the Federation. Well, let's get going. Okay.
Let's do this.
So, everybody ready? Here we go. 3, 2, 1, play.
All right. That's right. This is the one where Janeway starts off really kind of pissy.
Well, you know, that's why she goes to the holodeck, because she's pissy. You know, I would go to the holodeck when I felt pissy, blow some steam.
Only she gets ordered to go to the holodeck. But we're getting ahead of ourselves.
I want my doctor to order me to the holodeck.
Yeah, me too. Can I please go to the holodeck? I need some R&R.
So we have a very... Aaron Sorkin West Wing thing going on, where the camera's tracking backwards and we're walking and talking, going down the corridor.
This is true. Voyager doesn't do that terribly often. Not as much as other shows like West Wing.
Right.
Yes. Now, this is something that I felt was long overdue, about the possibility of moving the Doctor around the ship, and at the time, this seemed like the way to do it, you know, prior to the, you know... The portable emitter.
Well, can you really say it's long overdue? Because this was towards the beginning of season 2.
But what I'm saying, though, is that I thought about this right when the series started and thought they really ought to think of some ways to at least get him to the bridge or at least out of sickbay somehow with the holodeck. Yeah. But what if there's an emergency and there's no other medic? I mean, do you really want to rely on Tommy Boy?
Yeah, this is very true. And I don't know if I'd want to rely on Tommy Boy for everything, but definitely my flying and my cheese pizza making.
Yeah, definitely those two things. He's an expert, but medical, I'm sorry, he had, what, 2 semesters of biology or something like that?
I think just a field medic course or some bullcrap like that.
Something very basic, which, okay, that's like first aid training.
They definitely like shrinking the doctor, don't they? This has to be like the second or third time that we've seen it already.
It does seem to happen a lot, doesn't it? Maybe it's because of the squeaky voice that sounds really good, actually, on Picardo. It's hilarious. Now, this is a scene that I love. This shot's great. Big Janeway against Little Doctor.
This one, it just, I don't know. This one gets a little bit of an eye roll for me, just because I try to see this from a non-fan perspective. Like, if they were flipping through the channels, they'd go, oh, God, here's Star Trek.
It's true. You're right. If I was watching this and my husband walked into the room and saw this, he would just leave.
Yeah.
But I, for one, enjoy it.
I do like when the chief medical officer pulls this out of their belt, out of their utility belt, as it were, where they're like, hey, you know what? This is a medical situation, so I'm going to deem authority over you. And it's just like, we've seen every doctor do it in every single series. We've seen Bashir do it. We've seen Crusher do it. Definitely have seen the Doc do it. And oh boy, did we see McCoy do it.
Absolutely. Yeah. They don't pull out that card terribly often, at least in the TNG era. And I think McCoy did a lot more of it than anybody else. But when they do it, boy, they mean business. You're going to go to the holodeck and you're going to like it.
You know, I always thought, okay, so she's dressed up as her hollow novel character. Mm-hmm. And then, we see this all the time throughout the show. The person dresses up in their outfit, in their quarters, and then they go to the holodeck. Now, don't you think it would make sense just to do that in the hollow novel, like in the holodeck, where you just
you
say,
think,
like, okay,
right?
Give me some clothing that would fit this era, so that way you don't have to replicate it or have it made. Keep it in your quarters, you know, and have it take up space.
Yeah, I just thought about that. Like, does she have this hanging in her closet next to her uniforms, or does she replicate it each time? I mean, this is a complex thing that had to have cost some rations.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, I'm sure that she recycles it every time, or maybe not. Maybe she just keeps it and she saved up for that outfit. It just seems to make more sense that you would just go and put it on. And also, that way people don't know what you're doing in your holodeck, because they see the captain, they're like, oh, she's doing the Victorian hollow novel again.
Yeah, groan, eye roll.
You see Neelix in his BDSM outfit, you're like, oh, God, what's going on? What is he doing?
I don't want to know the safe word.
Exactly. So that way you can just keep it private.
Yeah, they should just have a little changing area. And didn't they eventually do that somewhere, like on DS9 or in the TNG movies or something? Like, I have the faintest echo of them doing that at some point, but I do not remember exactly where.
I honestly couldn't tell you right now. I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah, I almost feel like it's in Nemesis or something for some reason. Somebody can write in and set the record straight. Go to trek.fm/forums or trek.fm/contact. And please tell me where this is coming from, or if it's just some weird fabrication of my brain. Because that's entirely possible.
I never get tired of this intro.
I never get tired of looking at it.
Yeah.
I mean, the theme, as beautiful as it is, and it's so well put together all together, the theme, I've heard it so many times that, okay, whatever. It just kind of glosses over in my head now. But visually, this was the absolute best. Sorry, other series, but it was. It just was. I don't know. I always felt like DS9's was a little too slow, even though it was very beautiful. And then TNG, it was very basic. at, you know,
yes.
It was fine for its system. Time. We didn't know any different. It was great for what it was. But then compare it to this. Yeah. Sorry, Earl Grey guys. Now, a couple weeks ago, we mentioned regular guest stars appearing on various Trek shows. Carolyn Seymour, who plays this lady right here, has had several roles.
Like the, not the countess, but like the nanny or something. No.
I forget
the
exactly.
Governess or?
Yeah, maybe. I'm not exactly brushed up on my Victorian Hollow novel terminology.
Ugh, these kids' faces annoy me.
These children. I looked up this girl. Gosh, her name. She had a couple other roles in Star Trek. She was in Real Life, playing the Doctor's daughter as well. Yeah, Lindsay Hahn, there it is. She's apparently a musician now in L.A.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah.
Janeway kind of has this, when she looks at the kids, she has this kind of this coy, I'm going to beat you when your father's not looking look on her face.
Do you blame her?
Yeah, no, not at all, because it would be hard for me not to take my belt to the kid.
And back in Victorian times, that was completely okay.
Well, there you go. I would have been fine.
Yeah, give them what they deserve. Go along, children.
Take them to the nursery. I love that even like...
The nursery. How old are they?
Yeah, I love back then, that's what it was called. Like, wherever the kids lived, whatever their room was, that was the nursery,
right,
even if they were out of infancy.
It's not their room, it's the frickin' nursery. At what point did that change then, I wonder?
Well, I can't remember, but I was just having, no lie, I was having this conversation last night with my wife, because we watched Peter Pan, and I don't care that we don't have any kids, I'm still going to watch Disney. And so you have the father, like, who's just super frustrated, and, like, throwing stuff around. And he's just pissed off at Wendy, and he says, I think it's time for Wendy to leave the nursery. And everybody's like, no, Father, no. It's just like they gave Wendy a death sentence, and she's just going to, like, move down the hall to the next room.
Oh, no. It's like an execution, then. You're going to leave the nursery. You are not a kid anymore.
Okay, here's another thing. Here's another reason why it would be smart not to... not to take your clothes with you to the holodeck, because she just, bam, she's now on the bridge. In an emergency, is she really going to take the time to change out of her Victorian garb? Because, like, if it's a red alert and say the Vidians are attacking, she's like, oh, better get out of my Victorian dress. You know, that's going to take 5 minutes because it has 500 buttons.
Probably a little more like 15 because of all the freaking layers that thing has.
Exactly. And so if it was holographic, you'd be like, bam, naked,
right,
done. And now I can put on my uniform.
Put on the uniform and go. Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. No, but she probably had to go back to her quarters, take off the costume, put on a uniform, and then go up to the bridge.
And apparently change her hair.
She changed her hair back to the bun of steel. I mean,
yeah.
Janeway knows how to get it done, I guess. Now, I love what they say about this alien later on, about how he didn't show his face in an attempt to intimidate us. Mm-hmm. LOL.
Did you just say LOL?
Yeah, I did. Deal with it.
Don't do that again.
Are you going to paddle me with your belt? Send me to the nursery?
I have the power to erase that from editing.
It's true. You have that kind of power. Feel free if you really like.
And just like Janeway, I might abuse my power.
Only we can understand why Janeway more than abused that power with those children. We should note that this is the last time we see that god-awful holodeck program.
Who were we talking with who actually defended the Victorian Hollow novel?
I were having
a conversation with someone, and both you and I were just like, oh, good Lord, why is it there? Why is this happening? I don't know if it was in the forums or if it was on Twitter or if it was in person with someone. I can't remember. But they were like, hey, no, you know, like, everybody has their own thing. It's kind of like, you know, Jane Eyre or Jane Austen kind of thing. And we were like, no, it's boring. Shut it down.
Yeah. Oh, it couldn't have been Lori. Was it Lori? I don't think so. I think she hates it, too. Yeah.
Well, it might remain a mystery.
If for those who don't know, Lori used to co-host the show with us.
Think about how much food it would take to feed 150 people.
Yeah, it takes more than this right here.
Yeah, I mean, like, when we have, like, 12 people over, we're like, oh, good Lord, we don't have enough room for the food.
Right? And yeah, your whole table, right, is filled to the brim with all this stuff. Same here.
And so all that I can think of is that if they're on a three-shift rotation like the Enterprise was, that, you know, maybe everybody, like, I guess when you're in space, your day doesn't really have to exist on a regular day, so your lunch could be at, like, 5 at night. I don't know. I mean, all I can think of is, but then that would mean Neelix is making 6 meals, like, he's making 3 meals for 3 different shifts, so that's 9 meals a day. I don't know. So it just doesn't work.
Yeah, like, he would be working around the clock to always have food out. And we know that that's not true because we see the mess hall shut down several times.
That's right.
Because, well, I mean, I guess he does have to sleep.
Well, I mean,
every once in a while they let him. Yeah, I'm not really sure that's not something Trek ever really straightens out.
Yeah, it's, and also we didn't really get the sense that, see, like in The Next Generation is that everyone had their own replicator. And so we didn't really get the sense that 10 Forward was the only place to go get food.
That's right.
It was really just like an option. Yeah, you could eat on your own time. You could eat in your quarters. And I know that we see this later on where we see some people eating their quarters and you can get replicator rations later on in the series. But more often than not, 80% of the time, I'd say you'd have to get your meal in the mess hall because whatever Neelix was cooking is whatever you'd get.
Right.
And it's just not big enough.
Yeah, no, I'm not entirely sure how that works either. That's a great question. Another great topic for the forums.
Another great topic for the forums. Now, okay, so Janeway is hallucinating. She saw the little bastard girl out of the holo novel and in the hallway. And I'm so glad that... Okay, so immediately she goes and starts asking questions like, I saw some crazy stuff. Either I'm going crazy or maybe some of the projectors are going wonky. In so many other shows, people just rub their eyes and go, okay, maybe I'm just too tired. No, Janeway is smart enough to go, no, I'm living in Star Trek right now. This means something.
Yes, she is a citizen of the 24th century. She knows there's got to be more to this. We've kind of seen this sort of plot before, like with Beverly Crusher. If I'm not crazy, maybe the universe is crazy.
Yeah.
It's kind of like
this.
And she
was right.
Yes. You know, I want Little Bastard Hollow Child to be the title of this episode, just as a note.
Yeah, that won't
even if we can't make that happen, I that still gets my vote. I just want that out there.
Okay, I never really enjoyed this aspect because... We saw this in a couple of different shows where you could access panels within the holodeck, you know, like it's behind a cupboard or it's, you know, like you move a chair or you move a piece of furniture and then all of a sudden you can access the database of the holodeck. That doesn't make sense to me because in a three-dimensional space like this where you can have tons and tons of people, there's almost no limit to how many people you can have, is because we all have our own perspective in the holodeck. When someone looks like they're 1,000 feet away, they're probably actually right in front of you, just beyond arm's reach. And so because of that, it's all deals with force fields and photons and our perception of things. And... so that thing is ever changing. That's the only reason why it's feasible for Captain Picard to ride a horse on the holodeck or for O'Brien to go kayaking on the holodeck
right.
is because it moves the environment around you, not the other way around.
This is true. Absolutely true.
Opening up a panel and accessing in an ever-changing world, you'd never know where it would be.
Yeah, but they're so smart that they can figure it out. That's the only way I can think of to defend that. It's just one of those holodeck mysteries. I mean, there's so many things that we don't know that don't make sense about how the holodeck works. And I mean, they've even rewritten the rules a couple times on how the holodeck works. So we don't know what's what. I hate to say this. Maybe it makes me a bad fan. Maybe it makes me a bad fan. But I've learned not to question these things anymore.
Yeah, there's so many times, like, as a fan, it's kind of a cardinal sin to say,
oh, well, you know, the producers just screwed up, or that's what the writers wanted to do. You're not supposed to say that. What you're supposed to say is, well, by the time this happened, they had this quantum disturbance that affected the circuitry and the cells and blah, blah, blah. So you have to make up your own in-universe reason. Otherwise, you're just lazy. But in all honesty, the real answer is the producers just screwed up.
Yeah. It happened several times. They're human beings. Gotta live and let live, forgive them, move on. Yeah. That's about it.
Did you see how dejected Kate Mulgrew looked? Like, she looks so down on her luck. Like, I don't know what's wrong with me.
I wish it was an aneurysm. That would explain this.
Yeah, you can fix an aneurysm here.
Yes. But no. Nope, you're just feeling a little bit crazy, aren't you? You know, it happens to the best of us. We all have hallucinations from time to time, right?
Okay, that was the most overacted cold chill I've ever seen.
That was more of an electric shock, if you ask me.
Yeah, that was someone stomped on both feet and then shocked her with a cattle prod. That was the reaction that Kes just gave us.
Someone's down there at Jennifer Lean's feet and just pounds a hammer on him. Just, oh, ouch. Macabre. That is such an underused word. Macabre, and I can't say it, apparently. Yeah.
Macabre.
Yeah, macabre. Bunny Steele's getting a lot of action in this episode. We're getting a lot of different angles.
You can always tell when someone's going to get walked through. It's like you get a little bit of green screen. You're like, oh, someone's going to disappear or just going to walk right through another character.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like when you're watching an animated show and the background is a still image, as it always is. But the thing that's going to get destroyed or moved is a different color than the background.
This is true. This is true. Yeah. You know, I was never sad that we never had like a resolution to the Victorian Hollow novel. We never really learned what was going on. Like, I always figured it was just like Lord Burleigh had his wife chained up in the attic and he was out to have an affair with, well, whoever he possibly could for whatever reason. And then little Beatrice went up to the attic one day and saw her mommy and is very confused about the whole thing. And he's told her to write it off. And that was the end of the mystery. It's solved. He's just an evil, pervert jerk.
Yeah, I'm fine leaving it where it is.
Okay, yeah.
I always did enjoy... See, I liked her quarters because, you know, like the art on the walls always made sense to me. It was floral, it was of home, it was of earth.
Mm-hmm.
And like when you saw Captain Picard's quarters, it always had this garish like hotel space art where like if it was a really cheap sci-fi motel or something.
Right.
Where like it was like one of those creepy things that you see on Highway 37 and it's just like have an experience, you know. Yes. And like try the Final Frontier room, you know, like that's the kind of art that's on the that's on the walls.
Yes, it has the hot tub with all the jets in it.
Exactly, one of those rooms, you know. Mm-hmm. Where it comes with, like, you know. And so it's just, it always baffled me because, you know, you're in space. No, you know, like have pictures, like we have pictures of space because we're at home, we're on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like have pictures of things that you don't see every day.
It's true. Well, and one thing to consider, because some people say, oh, their quarters are so sparse on Voyager. Well, think about the fact that they were expecting to go on a 3-week mission on a brand new
ship. Or 3-hour tour, sorry.
Yeah, 3-hour tour. And, well, it just so happened they got stuck out of here. I always thought that she just didn't get everything moved over. And so it is a little sparse, but what she does have, it makes sense. And I mean, yeah. I dig it. I like the frame for the art on the wall. I love the fact that she's got flowers everywhere, something to cheer mm-hmm. her up and keep her spirits up. And then, of course, coffee ice cream. I mean, that is looking pretty good.
That does sound amazing, right?
It really does. I want some. Yeah. Why don't we have replicators, Tristan?
Because you are taking the weekends off and not just powering through with your engineering.
What? How? Why is that my responsibility? Wait a minute. When did that happen?
So she... Okay, we're seeing this, though, where she's still longing after Mark.
Yeah.
We see that photo, and I absolutely hate that she's in her uniform in the photo.
It doesn't seem quite right, does it?
You know that they were just like, hey, you know, Kate, let's just run outside real quick during between takes and mm-hmm. then take this quick photo for the frame.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. And I've griped about this so many times. When I see people in their off time, I want to see them in their space pajamas or in their off-duty clothing.
You're darn right. Yeah, you would think that with leisure time, she wouldn't have been in her uniform. She would have been in a nice, you know, comfy shirt and, I don't know, maybe not a pair of jeans, but something loose-fitting and comfortable. Certainly not a uniform.
I did like that we got to see some jeans in Enterprise.
It's true, but that makes sense. I mean, it's kind of bridging the gap between 24th century and now.
Yeah, absolutely, and... I
don't want to see Captain Janeway in jeans.
Because you know they'd be mom jeans, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It just makes sense.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, she would look like a total soccer mom, especially with like the season 4 short haircut. Oh, yeah. Brother, bring her the minivan and get it over with.
Yeah, it's just like, because it's the 90s.
Yes.
And it's just, you just look at her and you're like, you have a pair of mom jeans hidden away in your quarters, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Just, awful. I really don't like this scene. It just...
Why?
Because, well, Janeway is such a control freak. She clearly doesn't trust Chakotay to do anything.
Yeah, I agree with you is that you should be able to rely on your exo, because the thing is that the exo runs the ship. That's something that we didn't really get too terribly much in Voyager, is that the exo runs the ship. Riker ran the ship, and Kira ran the station. Mm-hmm. It's,
but you know, apparently like, Chakotay didn't.
Apparently Chakotay didn't, because that's what happened, is that he interacts with the crew, he makes sure that they're doing what they need to be doing, and he just enacts what the captain wants. So the captain's like, make sure that this gets done. He's like, aye, aye, you know, and you know, like, yeah. You know, like, and he reports the problems to her, and so she just makes big picture stuff, and he does everyday activities.
Right.
And
yes.
So it's just kind of like we got to find that balance in over captaining and not doing your job.
Yeah, but apparently Janeway is not doing this at all, because not only does she feel like she needs to give Chakotay every last detail, which he should know anyway. But then, like, she's doing it in a manner where I just feel like she does not trust him to do this at all.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, when I first saw this episode, I thought, it's a very simple negotiation. Just let him do it. Now, of course, this alien, there's a little more to him than a little negotiation. But on an average day, you couldn't trust him to get the job done? Then why is he your first officer? Come on, either put some trust in him, or get somebody in who you can trust.
I think it's definitely that lack of control, where Janeway is a control freak, because she knows that when she just like needs to go somewhere or do something, she's like, hey, Chakotay, you have the bridge. She can trust him. Obviously, she trusts him, but at that same time, she knows when the crap hits the fan, she gets to put her captain hat back on whenever she wants. And so when she's told by the doctor, no, you have to put the captain hat away for right now, that's when she'll freak out. And I feel like lots of us would react that way.
Yeah, I suppose so. If we were the captain of a ship, we would just have that innate desire. Okay, I've got to do something about it. It's my responsibility. I'm not disagreeing so much with that.
Because exactly
once
urgent.
We are getting fired upon here, I wouldn't be able to sit back in sick bay either.
See, Chakotay definitely kind of like just lit that one slide out like, evasive maneuver Gamma 5. You know, like, it's not exactly, like, urgent. Like, when three ships or two ships or whatever decloak off your port bow. I kind of like it in Star Trek 2009 with Captain Rabot when he's like, evasive pattern Data 5!
Well, I mean, it's just evasive pattern Delta 5. It's no big deal on Voyager. They do this every day. Just go through the motions.
Get classic it done. Look from the doctor right there.
Yes. Yes.
And this is when Chakotay is still the peppered XO.
Yes. I'm kind of digging that.
Yeah.
I really wish they wouldn't have dyed his hair.
I want to know what kind of hair did Tim Russ have during the show? Like, is that his hair?
I'm pretty sure it is his real hair, but what I wonder is when they were on hiatus between seasons, did he grow his hair out or did he keep it like this?
Yeah, like, did he keep that perfect hairline that's just, like, straight on, that goes straight over his forehead, and it's like this perfect rainbow on his head?
Yeah, I don't think that's how it is now. That's for
and
sure.
See, everyone in Star Trek has the pointed sideburns. I really need to start doing that.
That is a very Trek thing, yes.
Every male has that pointed sideburn.
Yeah.
And
from TOS
I remember,
onward.
Yeah, from TOS onward. And
it's a trademark.
I remember asking my dad one time, I was like, hey, can I do this? Like, I was like 10 or 12, and he's like, no, you can't.
Not yet.
Because you'll look like a fool.
I got a question for you. Okay. Cute. This is season 2 of Voyager, and it's very clear that Janeway is still very much in love and lonely for Mark. You think about a year and a half, 2 years in, that you'd be letting go or not?
Well, I mean, it's a unique situation for the captain because she can't, you know, date with anyone on the crew. Everybody's her subordinate. And the only person that she can really have flirtations with is her XO, and even that's pushing it. And
but she takes full advantage.
She takes full advantage, and, you know, like a dalliance with an alien, a casual one.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all that she can afford to do. And so she doesn't really have too much opportunity to move on. I mean, in order for the thing that made her move on was a hologram, Michael Sullivan.
Oh, but wait. No, you're forgetting the Dear John letter that she got 2 years prior to that. And then she finally succumbed to the holodeck.
Well, yes. But what I'm saying is that even, you know, she didn't move on to somebody else until Michael Sullivan. Like,
oh, true.
That is what I meant to say. But yes, the Dear John letter happened. And I don't know, like, if you're, you know, obviously Harry could move on, but that's because he had more options. I mean, he, you know, he was in love with Libby.
Yes.
But he, you know, he has the opportunity, essentially, where Janeway doesn't. And
that's
so I
true.
See her
and
holding
also,
on a little bit longer.
Harry's also younger.
Right.
And so therefore probably thinking a little more on live in the now. Whereas I feel maybe Janeway is just a little too overly focused on her captain life, not her personal life, which is why it takes so long for even anything to happen in the holodeck. I mean, I really wish they would have explored Janeway's loneliness more. We got glimpses
of it. It would
have been
interesting to see it just explore it a little bit further.
Because
beyond the Void episodes, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like she would have to kind of grieve the loss of that, knowing that it is gone, or certainly we find out that it is gone, but certainly acknowledging the potential that it was going to be gone before that she found out for sure. And then after the fact, yeah, I feel like they just brushed over that way too easily. A lot happened in the episode Hunters, and we just didn't get enough of an emotional impact on what happened with the Maquis and the Dear John letter, all of that. There's some severe emotional fallout that they had to deal with, I think. Now here comes the scene that we teased last week.
Yeah, we'll talk about it when we get to it.
Yeah, brother. I'm sorry, Jerry Taylor. What were you thinking? We've discussed this to death, so I'm not going to do it again.
Well, no, I love the scenario though. It's like we may be the last two people left. We'll have to reboot the the human race on our own.
Yeah, we'll have to settle on a planet with a monkey and a shuttlecraft, and it'll be fine.
I do really like if it wasn't for these two characters, like I do love this transition where he grabs her and pulls her close, and then all of a sudden, bed.
Yeah, the sexy vibes come out immediately, and I just love how she is not refusing it. She gets into it. What? Yeah.
And it's like, if only, you know, like real life was like TV where you're with your paramour and you're hanging out wherever you are, then bam, out you fall out of frame and you're in bed. But
yeah, it's like that.
See, there it is. But the thing is, though, is that I hate this moment because it doesn't belong. And as we've talked about, she had a strong connection with Chakotay, and so her subconscious linked that strong connection and perverted it into a sexual one when really it was really just a strong connection, not a physical or romantic one.
Well, I think it's the alien kind of perverting those deep down thoughts. Now, one thing I do find interesting with this episode, though, is what is everybody's deepest, darkest longing? You know what I mean? So, like, for Tuvok, it's to be with his wife. For Janeway, it's to be with Mark. For Paris, it's to make amends with his father, sort of.
Acceptance, maybe.
Acceptance. I think deep down that's what he wants, but he's still kind of being the rebel at this point. Like, get out of my life. I don't want to talk to you. Just get away from me. All you do is criticize me. But I could see, like, in that cycle, if that's all you're going to get back instead of acceptance, then you are going to react like that. So that was a nice examination, I think, of what deep down everybody kind of wanted, with the exception of B'Elanna. That was just twisted. Sorry. No, not buying it. I love the fact that they had a difficult time shooting that, Robert Beltran and Roxanne Dawson, because they felt like it was brother-sister, their relationship.
Well, I didn't know that they had a hard time shooting it, so I'm glad to hear that, because I'm glad that they were like, yeah, this is weird.
Yeah, they had several takes where they were just giggling because they thought it was so absurd themselves.
Well, that makes me feel better.
So now you know.
This scenario kind of makes me feel like, do you remember in the first movie of Harry Potter where they see they find a mirror and it shows you what your true desires are?
Yes, I remember that.
I always, like, whenever I saw that, I was just like, oh yeah, that's totally like, you know, the persistence of vision where, you know, like you see what you long the most. And I'm a pretty happy individual. Mm-hmm. And so I've always wished that I could have had a mirror like that or have a situation with persistence of vision, because I want to know what would pop up, because I honestly don't know what I long for.
Oh, you know, as scary as that prospect could be, boy, would that not be interesting.
I think it would be more interesting than anything else.
Yes. Now, Chakotay is right next to Janeway in the turbo lift here. I wonder what he's fantasizing about.
Oh, yeah. We never learned what his perspective is it?
No, he's not necessarily in B'Elanna's pipe dream. That was her fantasy.
Right.
Maybe he's making out with Kathy. I don't know.
No, he's strangling Seska right now. That's what he's doing.
Maybe that, too. That's a little more constructive use of the time.
And then, bam, Chakotay's not in the turbo lift anymore.
What happened to him? Did you eat him, Kathy? What just happened here?
Continuity.
Nope, not this time.
He would just see a reflection of himself.
Yeah, the doctor. He would see his emergency command hologram, opera singing virtuoso. Exemplary medic self.
There you go.
Yes. That, too, needs to be an episode title, although it's very long.
It is quite extensive. Yeah. I always enjoyed it whenever sickbay was dark, whenever it was eerie, and, you know, because you knew something was wrong or the crap was hitting the fan. Because we saw it this way in Caretaker, and smoke was everywhere and alarms were going off.
Oh, yeah.
And it just gives you this sense of... Because, even when, like, somebody's sleeping in the next room or he's doing late night, you know, calculations or something, the lighting is a little bit different than what we see in, oh, crap's happening mode.
This is true. It's true. I do like it when they do that, too. Good call. Yeah. That looks like it hurts.
Yeah, they always did a really creepy job with the makeup on a Voyager. Like, they did a really good job with burns and cuts and abrasions. It was a little too good at times.
You stole the words out of my mouth. It was so good, it was almost too good. And his eyes, like, it looks like it's swollen shut. I mean,
yeah,
I kind of have chills just thinking about it. Now, you know it's bad when it's up to Kes to save the ship. Is this the one and only time it happens?
No, there's several. Like, oh yeah, you know what she's thinking. No, there was a Kes. There was a few times when Kes really? had to throw things down. I think might have been one of the few times when she had to physically actually save the ship, where it actually hit the button. You know.
Okay. Well, I mean, yeah, she's just very blindly. And let's face it, this is blind leading the blind here. I mean, the doctor's not an engineer either, and they're still going to get this thing going.
Kes is very determined, though. I do like that about her.
Yes, she is. She is. She's very motivated, very focused. In fact, she says that later. Focus. And then makes things spurt out of Neelix's skin.
Some foam. I love this. He's looking up the manual. That's what he's doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that in Enterprise when this is very reminiscent of Phlox and T'Pol, when they're trying to work things out in engineering, and he's like, "Are you suggesting I read the manual?"
Yeah, heaven forbid. I love it. I do like the fact that Kes is not trusting that this is Neelix.
Yeah,
very wise for her.
Very wise and very Star Trek-y.
Mm-hmm. Especially since she is the last hope, so we kind of need her to make this work.
Her eyes are huge.
They are.
Oh, they're going to do that thing that they always do in Star Trek, where, like, the person who's not really there just stops trying to pretend and just stands there and then just berates the person.
Yeah. Here we go.
Like, you're gonna fail. Nobody likes you.
Yeah. They always go for that defense, don't they?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I know about that time you peed your pants in elementary school.
Yeah. You've got a big zit on your nose.
This messed me up when I was younger.
Oh, yeah?
Well, I mean, you know, you're young, going through puberty, and you're worried about whiteheads to begin with. And then you see something like Kes.
Is this what blackheads do?
Yeah, you're like, oh, good Lord.
All I really remember is Kes's shrill scream.
That woman could scream. Jennifer Lean knew how to shrill.
Oh, it's so horrible. It's so good, it's cringeworthy. I mean, it really is horrifying.
Yeah. There was, I made more than a few short films, and there was one actress who I hired, but I didn't get her to scream during the auditioning process. And so when came the time to actually record her screaming, it was the worst scream you've ever heard. Like, it wasn't blood chilling. It was all like,
oh, it was, boy.
Yeah, it was not Wes Craven. It was more Minnie Mouse.
Not exactly a scared scream. Almost like as if you were intentionally faking a scream.
Like, this alien, like, they did such a good job of making a pathetic-looking alien.
Well, think about it. This is a guy who's just going around in space, screwing with people because he can. He's got like, nothing bored, better to do.
And they even, like, put in, like, a permanent frown in his makeup.
He's sort of like the grumpy cat of aliens, only he's not funny.
It made me, like, every time I see him, I imagine him to sound like, what's the name of that cartoon dog? It's not Dopey, but it's like, I don't know if that's accurate.
I don't know. It wasn't Ren and Stimpy, I can tell you that.
No, I can't remember his name right now. Oh, well.
Another topic for the forums. Now, look at this guy's hands. They really did do superb makeup in this episode.
Yeah, I was just about to mention his hands, but then I started giggling when I saw B'Elanna pull up the phaser. they never ever did a good job of having the actors treat the phasers like real guns.
No. They just never treated on.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they never treated it like an instrument of destruction. It was always just like what it was. It was this plastic toy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was even a scene in TNG where Riker tosses it playfully to Crusher when he was talking about Spot, like defending himself against Spot. And they're like, that thing could literally explode the entire room. And he's just like tossing it to her like, joke.
No big deal. Well, maybe there's a lock or something. This is the apologist in me trying to think this through. But yeah, well, you press the
even
button.
Even guns today have a safety.
Not a good idea. Practice phaser safety.
But you were talking about his hands. I always really enjoy the makeup that they do on aliens' hands. I always think it's really inventive, and it's a nice little touch that they didn't have to do, but it goes the extra mile.
Exactly. And this guy, he's got like little holes in his hands and he's looking really veiny. It's just really detailed.
Yeah, it's quite nice.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, they did not get enough recognition for the makeup they did on this show. I don't think. Now, one thing that really does bother me is this is just the episode of the week, and nothing ever really comes out of any of this.
Yeah. Thank goodness, if you think about it, when it comes to Chakotay and B'Elanna.
This is true. Yeah, apparently she thought about it, because she says to Janeway later on here, I suppose I should think about it. She probably did for a fraction of a second, and then just, no.
I love how B'Elanna was so disturbed by having sex with Chakotay that she had to go to Janeway and talk about it. Like, I hopped in the sack with Chakotay and I don't know what to do.
Well, you know, Janeway and Torres, I think, could have had an even deeper relationship than they did have. I saw early on in the series how these two were going to become close confidants.
Yeah.
And so to see like little moments like this, I felt was building the path to that, and they just never quite went there with it. I think that's unfortunate. I think they could have had a great friendship.
Yeah. And ever since Parallax, I thought they were going to have something like that.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, starting with episode 2, they had that in place. They had it set up.
It's funny. Like, this conversation easily could have turned into, like, I had sex with Coco, and Janeway just throws her coffee and says, no! He's mine!
Well, this was before resolutions. Had it happened in season 3, however, she might have done a double take.
She might have been like, what?
Yeah. But then B'Elanna, by season 3, things are starting to happen with Tom.
Yeah,
so,
thankfully.
Yeah, thank goodness. Thank goodness. We averted a disaster here. It's good. I always thought that was a little strange. Sweet dreams. Like,
yeah.
Really? Oh, brother.
It was supposed to be like ironic and funny because of what just happened, but then it just kind of came off as creepy. Like, thanks,
yes,
thanks,
thank
Captain.
Yeah, I'm off to go dream about Chakotay again. Thanks a lot. Oh, brother. Okay. Well, that
I'm
is the
glad
episode.
That was erased from history.
We can now take the brain bleach.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was it. That was Persistence of Vision. That was our commentary for it. Now, we talked about a lot of things. We talked about mom jeans and sex with Coco and belting holographic kids. But we'd love to hear your opinion on Persistence of Vision. So please go to trek.fm/forums or tell us directly by going to trek.fm/contact.
Persistence of Vision isn't the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week, so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Roddenberry did not like that sequence at all because he felt that Kirk would not have done that, that wasn't in the Star Trek spirit, that Kirk would have studied the creature, not killed the creature.
Earl Grey.
I love how the Cardassians look, especially once they're firmly established and not wearing what looks to be like cardboard drink holders you get from McDonald's. It looks like that's the material that it's made out of.
The orb.
to have this many habitable moons surrounding a habitable planet seems very interesting, because usually what you get is a planet that's uninhabitable but is being orbited by a habitable moon.
The Ready Room.
And Worf's like, well, I was at the Marzon colony, and then the audio fades out where the writers are like, we're just not even going to try to explain this.
To the journey! Just think about it. The Doctor is a priest. That alone is enough to end the episode debate and say that's a fantastic episode.
That's like saying Spirit Folk is worth watching because Harry kisses a cow.
Well, there you go. Commentary, Trek Stars.
Just because he can go away doesn't mean that he can't come back.
To life. Because he dies.
He
Wait,
dies.
What?
Literally, he like gets his head chopped off. It's kind of brutal. But
we're skipping
spoilers.
Over the part where Molaram pulls his heart out.
Well, yeah, there was that too with the fire.
Yeah.
Warp 5.
I wish selfies were as big of a thing then as they are now, or they were as big in 2003 when this was filmed, because they'd be like, remember that? I have a selfie at the time I turned into an alien. I have a selfie of me with ridges.
Melodic Treks.
Now this changed when he sang in Leonard Bernstein's Mass, and Bernstein himself saw Picard and told him he should pursue being an actor.
Continuing mission.
The original series has its own particular lore and fandom that is different.
Yeah.
It is different. So it's so unique to be a part of something that is so dedicated to bringing back such a particular and specific part of that Star Trek universe.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
To check out all of our shows, we're available on any imaginable platform. Go to trek.fm/pd for the podcast directory so you can access everything, or do what I do and subscribe to our master feed where you'll get every single Trek FM podcast that comes out as it comes out. So we've got a little bit of a promotion going on here on Trek FM through the rest of July, and this is a way to help us out. If you have not written us an iTunes review or a Stitcher review, or if you haven't reviewed the master feed, you have a chance to not only help us out, but to win some prizes in doing so. So here's the deal. You go to iTunes or Stitcher, write us a review, and then go to trek.fm/review and complete the form there to let us know your screen name, who you are, so that we know who wrote what. There's some great prizes that you become eligible for, like a Blu-ray or a DVD of your choice. There's Star Trek novels, all sorts of fun stuff. So if you haven't written us a review, now is the time. And this show would not be possible without the help of our sponsors, so let's hear about them.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks, with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial, to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm. And also Trek Fan, a great way for you to take your love of Star Trek and put it into action. At Trek Fan, you will explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. Challenges include communications, engineering, and flight operations. There's internet relay chat, free books through Starfleet Academy, and much more. Best of all, it's absolutely free. Not just free to play, but completely free. Find out more by visiting fm.trekfan.org. Again, that's fm.trekfan.org. And remember to use this special URL so they know you heard about it here on To the Journey and Trek.fm.
Now, next week, we've got an interesting thing lined up, Tristan. What is it?
A couple of episodes ago, our topic was Janeway's best command decisions, and we promised you that we would do Janeway's worst command decisions, and that is what we're doing next week, because nobody's perfect, so tune in next week to find out what we think Janeway's worst command decisions were. But until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!